Welcome to Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, where business leaders tell their stories and share their insights. All our guests have a personal connection with Nottingham Business School. So listen, learn, enjoy and share.
Welcome to another episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with me, Mike Sassy. Sarah Gregory is Deputy Chief People Officer and People Experience Director at the BBC. Her role involves shaping culture and driving change at the world's leading public service broadcaster. In this episode, we're exploring a powerful yet often overlooked step in leadership development, taking on your first board position. Now, it's widely acknowledged that serving as a non-exec director on a board in the private, public or not-for-profit sector offers a unique opportunity to contribute to decisions that impact organisations at the very highest level. Obviously, non-execs are not involved in daily operations, but for emerging leaders, a non-exec role is not just a career milestone, it's a platform that can give them both purpose and perspective. But what is it really like to sit around that boardroom table? How do you prepare for the responsibility? And most importantly, why should aspiring leaders consider board membership as part of their leadership journey? Now, outside her day job at the BBC, Sarah Gregory was 4 years a member of the board at the national governing body for swimming, Swim England. She's also been a member of the board of governors here at Nottingham Trent for 5 years. So Sarah, welcome to this episode of the Business Leaders Podcast.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be here.
Good stuff. So you originally studied at Nottingham Trent for your master's. You went on to begin your PhD here, which you're still studying for. You're also on the board of governors at NTU. Had you intended to stay this long?
Good question. So I first came in 1998 and NTU did look different at that time, but instantly just felt really welcome. I fell in love with the city, really. It's just this perfect combination of wonderful urban landscapes as well as green spaces, massive sporting infrastructure, and just a massive creative hub. It's got in its history, you know, at one point it was like the centre for lace making in the entire world. You know, it's just a really great creative place to be. And probably didn't think I was going to be here this long, but I've absolutely loved it and felt right at home.
Happy to have stayed.
Yeah, very happy. Yeah, thank you.
So in your day job, I think, as I just said, you're a HR director at the BBC, which has more than 20,000 staff. You previously held senior HR roles at BT, Aviva, Boots. So how have your experiences in big organisations shaped your approach to people strategy?
That's a great question. I mean, they are big organisations, aren't they? Really big global brands. And it does, I think, influence how you think about setting people strategy. And I think early on in my career, I didn't start in HR. I started in very, very different roles.
So you've come through what, law or administration?
Well, hot off the heels of my master's degree at Nottingham Trent University, I got on the grad scheme at BT and they trained me how to be a project manager. And, you know, within weeks, I was right in at the deep end with loads of support, but I was helping to, you know, basically install telephony networks and IT networks into customers' premises, and I had to be the person who was the face of that organisation, talking to customers, making sure they were happy with that service. And I really loved that side of it. I loved thinking about this customer, you know, whatever organisation it is bought this product or this service, and your role there is to, you know, knock it out of the park for them, make it amazing, and deliver what they need for their business. So that really influenced me early on. And then I saw that through the different brands that I worked through. So Aviva, you know, a really great organisation, putting customers right at the heart of their work, about protecting people at their most vulnerable time through, you know, it might be, you know, your car's broken down or you've had a flood in your home or something like that. And it's about how you can support that customer in that moment. So I felt really deeply connected to each purpose of each organisation. Back at Boots, you know, really amazing brand that has got pharmacy and healthcare right in its heart. So all of those organisations are now even at the BBC, where the audience is everything to us. You know, your people strategy is all about how do you put yourself in service of that? How do you create people who are excited about that mission, really care about it? So I think that really influenced my early approach.
Okay, but these are all big organisations.
Yeah.
Is being big a part of what you enjoy?
I think those individual interactions matter, because you've got to, for every single customer experience, audience experience, you want it to be amazing. But for me, it's about the purpose and the mission of the organisation, and if that's in service of the customer experience or an amazing audience experience, that's what really energises me and excites me. So I love creating environments where people can thrive and do their best work in order to deliver for their customer or their audience or their patient.
So you also have experience, in addition to these day jobs that we've just been speaking about, you also have experience as a board member. You were 4 years on the board at Swim England. You've now been a number of years here at NTU. So what inspired you to pursue your first non-exec board role? How did that come about?
I think quite early on in my career, I was thinking about, you know, how do I, from that point of being a graduate at BT, how do I like progress my career from there? And I found a really amazing book as I was progressing my career. I really recommend it to people. It's, and apologies if I pronounce the name wrong, but it's Innes Vicart. And it was a book about senior women. And she went to go and interview lots of people in sort of chief executive type roles, all female leaders in the UK, and went to ask them about what are the experiences that helped them shape their career. And some of the things that she had put in her book were around, you know, start by having an early stretch assignment, something that is really outside your comfort zone, then go on to get, you know, operational experience, people management. And she has these 9 steps, basically, that you can flow through, ending up in the executive committee. And I'd worked my way through those steps and sort of taken her advice and all the advice of those amazing women who'd so generously given their time and their experience. And I was thinking about, well, what's next for me? And I thought I'd really love to take on a board job, but just didn't know how to do it and if it was really something I could do, to be honest. But the BBC had this really amazing development programme where you could take on some training with the Non-Exec Director Association, and they basically taught you what a board is, what good governance looks like, really important things about your role, the insurance that you might need to have in place, you know, what a board CV looks like, because it's very different to an employment CV. And they helped with, you know, finding board vacancies and giving you the confidence to just give it a try. So through that process, I thought, well, why not? Let's give it a try.
What a great employer. What a great employer to be so helpful to do something that, I mean, obviously they're going to get a better trained and more well-rounded individual working for them, but that's incredibly helpful. Did you take the job with the BBC knowing that this was going to be part of it, or was it, hey, it just turned out that way?
Oh, I had no idea, but I mean, it was fantastic development. And I think then going on to take on my first board job, you know, going for that interview, being interviewed by a panel of people who are, you know, trying to assess me as a potential board member is very different to going to a standard job interview. This is an unpaid board position and just, you know, an opportunity to be with an organisation that has, again, amazing purpose and impact.
And this is Swim England. Were you
yes.
a swimmer?
I wasn't a swimmer, and actually that was one of the reasons that attracted me to it, because I'm the sort of person that I would characterise it as I like to swim with my hair up and not get my hair wet, right? So I enjoy the process of swimming, I enjoy being in the water, but I'm not a competitive swimmer.
Sure, but you went for a job as a non-exec
yep.
with Swim England. Was it just something that you, was it an advert that you answered?
It was. And I had, you know, a really interesting kind of lens and thinking, actually, well, this sports governing body is not only there for the competitive swimmers, the pathways that people come through to compete at a national and international level, but they're also there for really important purposes like teaching children how to swim, encouraging people to be in the water because it's great for mental health. It's a non-weight bearing sport. It can, you know, all sorts of reasons. It's great to bring people together. And we want more people to be confident in the water. That's a really important life-saving skill. And I thought, actually, if we're going to bring people into swimming, we do need a diverse perspective in there around people who aren't naturally you know, swimmers and have been swimming their whole life. So I think that was part of the role I played on the board, to bring that different perspective into that group.
But just one step backwards. So you went in for this interview and they said, well, obviously you, and it's an unpaid position, as you pointed out, they looked at you and thought, well, I'm guessing you are a great candidate for this job. And they said, why have you done it? And you said, well, look, you know, and you've just, as you've just explained, I think it's just important. Did they think it was strange, or did they just take it as the most normal thing in the world?
They were really interested in that perspective. They were, you know, really, you know, keen to sort of look at all aspects of attitudes to swimming and being in the water as, you know, part of an important mission of life, building life-saving skills. But with any board role, you're there really to represent the sort of skills and experiences that you could bring. And my experience that I was bringing was my HR background. So in most of the interview, it was talking about the relevant skills that I might have in that sort of field, in addition to the alignment to the kind of purpose of the organisation as well.
So fast forward to your first board meeting. How was that?
Oh, gosh, I felt so nervous. I felt so nervous, and I just wanted to do a good job for them. You're very aware when you go into your first board meeting, you know, board terms just, you know, normally have a fixed cycle to them, and you can sometimes take a second term, a third term, etc. But they've normally got a fixed period of time. So you've got this rolling period of people coming into boards and leaving boards, and that's quite normal. But what you notice when you arrive is that the board team are all in full flow. You know, they know this organization like the back of their hand. They're really into the, you know, the content of the day, and they very much know their stuff, as they rightly should. So you're coming in not knowing any of the context, and I think it's that confidence at the very outset. So yeah, but also excited as well. You know, you feel the weight of the responsibility, but you think, gosh, I could be, you know, a part of this mission. It feels really exciting.
Any surprises?
Yeah, I mean, I thought I was going to be sort of brought in to talk about people and culture stuff, which I was, and I was able to support and provide, you know, guidance around that sort of stuff and play my role as a board member from that perspective. But what was really surprising to me was there was a lot of encouragement to get out of your lane. You know, there might be a conversation on property, there could be a conversation on finances, there could be a conversation on wider governance, on regulation. And you just have this brilliant opportunity to then step into those different areas and give a different point of view.
We hear a lot of conversations about siloed organisations. This sounds like almost the opposite. Was that peculiar because Swim England was a particularly good organisation in that way, or are boards of directors different?
I think a good board chair will bring in different contributions around the room and invite different contributions. And I had, because it was my first board role, I had really supportive people around me there who were deliberately encouraging me to be in. And, you know, normally in a board position, you know, you have an annual review with the chair where they talk about your contribution, what you're observing, what you're noticing. And the feedback there was, yeah, definitely lean into those other areas. You can go beyond that as well. And I was surprised as well by just how much I felt a part of their organisation. Even though you're at the board level, you're not part of the management. You're there to inspire, to provide governance and oversight. I really felt passionate about what they were trying to achieve in society.
Okay. So how did you build your credibility and influence as a first-time board member? So I'm picturing this in my head now. So you've got a very supportive set of colleagues. You're a first-time member, but how do you build that credibility and influence across disciplines other than HR, for example?
Yeah, so I think it's really important when you first step into that board role is just to really listen. It's so tempting to sort of, when you hear there's a problem or a challenge, to go, well, I know exactly what they could do. I've faced that before. You know exactly what you could do here. But you just have to let it sink in. You just have to listen. It's a new context. Really, really absorb it for a little while. And even if you have those reflections around, you know, I've got an idea about something, you can reposition that and say, well, actually, I've observed that, you know, this has particularly happened, you know, or I've got an idea, you know, I've used in a different organisation. I just want to bring it to the room for conversation. So you don't step into that management role. You're not directing, but you have the opportunity to just reflect things back. So I think it's just taking a pause and allowing that role to sink in.
What if your issue was almost the opposite, in that you know, a nervousness to jump in and get involved when other people are so obviously well established in what they do and good at what they do.
Yeah, and I think there is a lot of that at the very outset. You know, you can feel, I mean, I talk to a lot of people now who say, I could never take on a board role. And I was like, why not? You've got so much to give. And there are so many people who would benefit from being on boards. You know, boards should be made up of really diverse teams with different life experiences, reflect different parts of society. And it's normal to be quite nervous to put your voice in to start off with. I would say I definitely felt like that.
But you overcame it.
But you overcome it and, yeah. And the board, you know, and a good chair will welcome you in and you build your confidence over time.
So now we're going to take a quick break from our chat to mention the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. As we've learned from many of our guests, effective business leadership is about confidence, adaptability, and thinking strategically. These are the key ingredients to delivering innovation and impact in crowded competitive markets. So if you are ready to transform your career, visit ntu.ac.uk/MBA to explore the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. We're one of only 1% of business schools worldwide who hold the prestigious Triple Crown accreditation. That's ntu.ac.uk/MBA to find out more. Now back to the show. I can see what established business leaders, organisational leaders, you know, I can see why they want an effective board to help them shape their future, their organisation's future. But again, I come back to it again, you're not being paid. And the duties of a non-exec are quite onerous. Why would other future leaders consider this as part of their career path?
You know, when you work in an organisation, particularly within one function, let's say like HR, like I do, you're looking at maybe one part of the organisation at once. Yes, you're looking at the whole picture, but this is a real opportunity to see the organisation from a helicopter level, see the whole strategy, be a part of their whole mission and see different types of conversations happening, different members of the executive coming to present different views and perspectives. And it gives you a wider awareness of how an organisation is run, how it's governed, its responsibilities, its a sense of direction. Your job is that kind of oversight, support with a long-term strategy. So you have to really step back from resisting the temptation to provide solutions and really being part of that kind of governance committee. You get to coach, you get to inspire. And then all along the way, there's a career path of board position. So you can come in as a co-opted member. This is where you're like a specialist in your subject area. You can be a full board member or a member of a board subcommittee. You can be a chair of a subcommittee, or you can be a senior independent director or even a board chair. So there's a really big career path.
These things are all feeding into your own career outside of this, because remember, this is your non-exec career. Your day job, do you feel yourself getting better and more able to do that on the basis of the fact that you're doing this in your spare time?
I think you'd have to ask my team that, but I find it very fulfilling, really fulfilling in terms of you feel like you're part of a big mission. It definitely helps with strategic thinking because you've got to have one eye on the present and then you've got to have another on the future of the organisation, the long-term future of the organisation. It does make you think more strategically. It makes you appreciate the important sort of functions of an organisation and how important it is for those to work together seamlessly, and how, as we started off our conversation, thinking about the customer in mind of that organisation, whether it's a student, a patient, a swimmer, you know, whoever that is, to keep them at the heart of everything you do and make sure their values and integrity are there.
You seem like an enthusiast, if you don't mind me saying so. So I'm duty bound to ask you, what do you personally enjoy most about being a board member?
I work with some really talented people on boards. I think that's been a really brilliant discovery for me. Sometimes you get, you know, certainly in, like sports governing bodies, you get member nominated people. So people who are nominated from a particular region. So you get like a national perspective on what's happening in that sport. You get to work with, you know, some of the best professionals. There might be audit professionals, finance people. And you build your network and all the different perspectives that you hear. I find that really fulfilling. But I think for me, it's about making a contribution towards an organization's bigger purpose. I really love that. I really love being a part of it. And if I can give something that has an impact, that has a positive impact for others, either the executive team, the organization, or the board team itself, then I feel like I've done a good job.
There's something that I'm just seizing upon in your last answer there has made me think about something I read that you wrote about preferring thoughtful leadership. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, thoughtful leadership. I think for me, my leadership style has really changed over the years. I think when I, very early on in my career, I was quite driven, quite ambitious. And
banging on the table?
Definitely not banging on the table. No, definitely not.
Well, there we are. So you were always restrained. There we are.
Yeah. Probably a bit more focused on delivery, get things done. And now I'm a bit more reflective, I think, in my leadership style. I think there's a lot to be said when you just sit back and think and reflect. And particularly in, whether it's a team conversation, whether you're looking at an organization strategy, to take a bit more time, bring different people in, bring a wide group of people with you. I think that's sort of thoughtful leadership to me, to be more considered. Whereas, my early days, I was, quite fast-paced, ambitious, focus on delivery. Whereas now I'm just thinking more about the bigger picture.
Do you wish you'd started that earlier, or is that
much earlier?
Well, maybe it's something that just comes with time as your career progresses, I guess. Okay, so talking about things that I'd read that you've written, I also read something that you wrote advocating quite passionately, I think, for the BBC Raised Network, which supports employees from less advantaged, more diverse backgrounds. So, how do boards benefit from having members who do have diverse views, diverse life experiences?
Yeah, really passionate about this topic.
This is your thing. This is your PhD as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Tell us what your PhD is again.
So I'm looking at talking to people from the BBC who are from working class backgrounds, and I'm trying to understand how their life experiences and their identity, their working class origin identity, shaped their attitude to work and their careers. We know a lot about some of the barriers to working class origin individuals in terms of their career progression, but there's so many assets and strengths. So I was really trying to examine that, and I'm working on my PhD at the moment, just at the thesis writing stage. But when it comes to boards, I mean, that is a hugely relevant connection, because, I mean, just even at the BBC, our whole purpose is to reflect the nation back to itself as one of our key objectives. And you can do that when you've got a group of people who reflect the nation that you serve. And I think all boards can really benefit from that, really different views. And I think it can be one of the things that stops people from getting into thinking about whether a board position is suitable for them. And I really want to encourage more people to just give it some consideration, because you can add so much. You've got your own individual life experience that organisation can really consider, and there might be new solutions they've not considered before, or new questions or challenges that haven't been considered. You might spot some risks that somebody else has overlooked. So it's a really important thing to do, to have a really diverse board.
So it goes without saying, you would recommend anyone who is hesitating just because they think, oh, that's not for me, to just jump in with 2 feet and go for it.
I think at least explore it. Perhaps have a conversation with somebody who might be on a board that you might be interested in for the future. Find out a bit more about what's involved. I also went to a session from an organisation called Women on Boards, and they had a lot of presentations from people who were already on boards, just describing what it was like, how you can get involved. And that made it even more accessible for me, just to hear from people who are already in a board setting.
And finally, back to your day job. So perhaps you could give us one lesson from your illustrious career in HR that you think maybe every leader should bear in mind as they navigate the future.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious answer would be obviously care for your people and engage your teams and so on. That would be an obvious answer. But I think a more unconventional one might be thinking about the next generation of people entering the workforce. Think about post-COVID, people coming into the world of work in different ways. We understand, for example, now much more about neurodiversity in the workplace. We know the next generation are coming in with different expectations. We know the impact of things like hybrid working and how people like to work. So I suppose it's about not carrying the assumptions of how we worked as leaders and carrying that through to the next generation. They might be looking for something completely different. So I think leaders generally know how to lead their teams, know how to deliver their work. But I think perhaps the thing we all need to do a bit more of is connecting to the next generation and finding out what their expectations are of work for the future and how we can help them thrive. With all of the new changes coming, how AI is going to shape the world of work, I think being really connected to that generation is really important.
Okay, help those people who are just coming up behind us.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Sarah Gregory, thanks very, very much for joining us for this episode of the Nottingham Business Skills Business Leaders Podcast.
Thanks, Mike.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Nottingham Business Schools Business Leaders Podcast with Sarah Gregory, why not listen to previous episodes with the global head of emerging talent at Rolls-Royce, Ellie Long, the former CEO of the Financial Ombudsman Service, Caroline Wyman, or the co-founder of the Amazing If company, Sarah Ellis. This episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast was produced by Russell Bingley and presented by Mike Sassy.